We present My Music. A musical panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreier. And here to introduce the teams is Steve Race.
Thank you and hello again. One of my favourite BBC music commentators recently ended a programme by saying that next week the subject will be so-and-so, and he said, we should be looking particularly at the subject in general. Well, that's what we should be doing undeniably in the company, as usual, of Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton, John Amis and Frank Muir. As usual, Ian Wallace, the first music goes to you. Two composers' names, please, that's for your first mark, and a rough idea of how many years elapsed between their birth dates.
Well, hearing that music, I am back with thudding heart in front of a television camera, a very large number of young people in the Kelvin Hall in Glasgow, beginning a programme of music for young people, and what better than the Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra?
Yes.
And the two composers, Benjamin Britten and Henry Purcell.
Thank you.
The years that separate them...
separate their birth dates, actually.
Well, their birth dates. Well, I just sort of think of composers very roughly by centuries. I would say Purcell is 17th century.
Yes.
And Benjamin Britten, perhaps just... born in the 19th century?
No.
The very end or the very beginning of this one?
No, you'd be surprised, actually. Born much more into this century than you might imagine.
What, about 1910?
About, yes. Mm. 1913, to be precise.
1913.
I can afford to be precise because you don't know when Purcell was born.
No, that's right. Quite right.
Have a just a wild shot, then, at how many years?
Sort of 1650?
Yes, sort of. So... all that remains now is a rather complex
Yes, I haven't got my electronic computer with me, unfortunately. Well, it's about 250
years. It is indeed, yes. It's about 254 years. Purcell's birth date may be
a
little uncertain. Purcell's birth date may be a little uncertain. 1659 or thereabouts. 1913, Benjamin Britten was born. 2 marks to Ian Wallace.
The other day...
yes, John?
I met Dr. Robert Simpson, composer, whom you may have heard talking on the radio. And I said, look here, Dr. Robert Simpson, M.A., I met you about 3 weeks ago, and you told me that when Inigo Jones got married, Henry Purcell wrote a catch... of which the words were, in I go, in I go, in I go, Jones. I say, well, I thought this was very funny, but the other day I happened to be standing in front of a bookshop. There was a biography of Inigo Jones. And I looked up and I found that Inigo Jones died when Purcell was about 5. What have you got to say to that, Dr. Robert Simpson, M.A., D.Mars? He said, well, all I can say, John, is that with dates you can prove anything.
Dennis Norton, here's a little more from the same recording we heard just now. Who, in your case, who is the narrator?
The first section is the woodwind, in which the players blow, and the instruments are made mostly of wood.
Would you know who that would be?
No, it's one of those you should know, because it's an awfully good voice, and it's a very well-known voice. Do you know who it is?
Is it the man who was in the Forsyth saga?
Have a go at the name.
Oh, Eric Porter.
Eric Porter?
Oh, well done.
And for your second mark, Dennis, which acting role made him world famous?
Well.
Soames Forsyth on BBC television. Yes, that's a good example of a team working together. Yeah. You've got the first name, you've got the second name. Two marks. John Amis, what is this? First of all, what is it?
I think it's the Violin Concerto by Beethoven.
Yes, David Oistrakh playing the last movement there. And for your second mark, John, at the first performance of that concerto, what happened between the first and second movements?
They played all kinds of pieces.
Commercials.
Actually, worse than that, Frank. Yes, John's right. The soloist, a man called Clement, or Clément, played an interlude, a piece which called for the violin to be held upside down. And they then went on with Beethoven's Violin Concerto. Almost unbelievable, but true.
Where was it?
Two marks to you. Where? I don't know. Somewhere on the continent. Sweet. Do you know where it was, John?
I should think very likely in Vienna.
Vienna, I should imagine, but yes, probably.
Could be Australia with the violins upside down.
Oh. I couldn't think why you suddenly wanted to know. Now I know. A gag was gestating, wasn't it? Yeah. Frank, your turn. Who is the performer here?
Hello, young lovers. Whoever you are, I hope your troubles are few. All my good wishes go with you tonight. I've been in love like you.
Romantique. Qu'est-ce que c'est, Franck?
It's, I've heard this, it's Casbah Charlie.
That's right.
Charles Boyer
gets you one mark, yes. One or two listeners have been hoping that Frank and his partner would win one of these games by a large margin.
Well, by any margin.
Well. It's fortunate, Frank, that your subsidiary question carries a bonus score of 200 marks.
You're sure of yourself, boy, aren't you?
Boy, yes.
Question is, who sang that song in the film?
Would who didn't sing it help?
No, let's have who did sing it. Well, who didn't sing it?
Who
yes,
didn't sing it was Deborah Kerr. Right?
Yes, Deborah Kerr didn't sing it, no. That's right. Well, that's certainly worth 100. Do you know who did do the singing for her in that film?
Let's go home.
John, do you know?
Was it Al Saxon?
No, it was not Al Saxon. You'll get 100 out of 200 for your bonus, Frank, because you've got Deborah Kerr. It was Marnie Nixon's voice.
Oh, dear. Oh,
doubling for Deborah Kerr. So, the score at the end of round one is a lead by 100 marks, John Amis and Frank Muir. Here are some words and thoughts about music, some criticisms. Ian Wallace, in the collected works of a certain music critic, I came across a description of a wind instrument as the chromatic bullock.
Did you?
Yes. Can you name the instrument? Officially, it belongs to the key bugle family, and it comes in three sizes, alto, bass, and double bass.
The chromatic bullock?
Bullock, yes.
Well, that's the kind, presumably, who make a noise that goes sort of...
Well, yes.
I think that deserves 50 marks for animal impressions.
The instrument starts with an O, I can tell you.
With an O? Mm. Oh, well, there aren't many instruments that start with an O, are there?
There aren't, are there?
No, the
French horn.
The French horn, yes. And it's obviously not the oboe. Oh, Offie Clyde.
Offie Clyde, yes. I think a mark, don't you? The Offie Clyde, yes.
I think that's worth 75, actually.
I'm in generous mood today. The Offey Clyde, and the critic concerned went on to say that it was born obsolete. Dennis, this same critic wrote of Rossini, "I cannot say rest his soul, for he had none. But I may at least be allowed the fervent aspiration that we may never look on his like again." Do you recognise the literary style?
No, I don't, but I recognise your reading, actually.
Really?
Steve, your reading habits, yes, because you come on strong. I think it's Bernard Shaw.
Yes, that's the way I read Shaw, is it?
No. But Shaw's been getting quite a play in this programme over the last 6 months or so. I think you've got them all out from the library.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You'll be getting the tickets soon. You know. You get transported if you keep it out for more.
You had a fair chance of guessing who it was anyway, because not many people are that sort of critics and write music and sentences like that. Music criticism, cornered, upset. Mark, to you, it was indeed Bernard Shaw. John Amis, Shaw went to a performance of someone's Ocean Symphony and wrote in his review, "In judging this Ocean Symphony, it should be borne in mind that the composer is a Russian and that in no country in Europe is it possible to keep so far away from the ocean as in Russia. This composer is only oceanic in respect of not being fresh and of being drenchingly copious." It's strong stuff. Who was the composer of that Ocean Symphony?
Well, first I was going to say it was rough going, but then when you said it was Russian, then I switched over and thought it must be Rubinstein.
Anton Rubinstein, of course, not Arthur. Yes, Anton Rubinstein. Shaw also called it his Ramsgate Symphony. Frank, this is Shaw again, reviewing a performance of a piano concerto. "I could see that he felt like a titan when he was threshing out those fortissimos with the full band, but he had the advantage of me, for he could hear what he was doing, whereas he might just as well have been addressing postcards for all that reached me through the din of the orchestra." And the musical dictionary describes the same pianist as having a dazzling technique and an amazing head of hair.
Paderewski.
Yes, please. Paderewski or Paderewski.
Was it not Paderewski who used to rather enjoy wandering around outside the concert hall and watching the public go in, which I would always imagine is that the most nerve-wracking thing that an artist can do is to sort of go and watch all these people piling in. It's so much more soothing to be in a quiet room at the back and imagining nobody's coming. Some very agitated lady came up to him, having recognized him, and said, "Oh, Mr. Paderewski, I cannot get a seat for your recital. It's absolutely impossible. What can I do?" And he said, "Madam, with the greatest pleasure, you can have mine."
Very nice story. Well, Paderewski it was, and the concerto that was being reviewed was incidentally Paderewski's own composition. Now on to the next round, and a student song from which I quote, "Let us make merry while we're young, because after youth comes old age and a long sleep." Or to put it in a Latin nutshell, "Gaudeamus igitur." Ian Wallace, here is that song. Who's the singer?
Gaudeamus igitur, juvenes dum sumus. Gaudeamus igitur, juvenes dum sumus. Post jucundam juventudem, post molestam senectudem, nos habebitur.
Ian.
You don't want all their names, do you?
just the chap on top.
I think the chap on top has the unmistakable timbre of Mario Lanza.
Mario Lanza. One mark, and he sang it in which musical comedy film?
Ah, no, I wouldn't. You said it was a student. I mean, yes. Was it the Student Prince?
Student Prince, yes, for your second mark. Student Prince it was. Dennis, here's part of the popular Serenade.
Overhead the moon is beaming, white as blossoms on the bough. Nothing is heard but the song of a bird, filling all the air with dreaming.
I think perhaps for the benefit of the benefit of the audience that can't see a thing, yeah. I ought to explain that Frank was doing a sort of Bernard Brothers, they were called, weren't they?
Well, it happens to be one of Frank's songs that he sings absently when he doesn't know he's singing. And he reproduces a chap we once heard singing it in Blackpool who had, I think, what you call a vibrato.
Yeah.
So that it always said that, oh, and he used to sing overhead, the moon was gleaming. Which is very funny until you're working with somebody who does it like 18 times a day without realizing he's doing it.
Yeah, true enough.
Dennis, what do you sing when you're not singing?
When do I sing when I'm not singing? I think I'd rather go into Sleepy Time Gal. Right? Have you made a note of that, John?
We'll have a round of questions about that one of these days.
My life of music.
Meanwhile, back to the student prince. Dennis, your question. What was the correct full title of that show? And what was Al Jolson's connection with the first performance in 1924? Full title.
I don't know what the full title is. I just thought it was...
No.
Selections from the student.
No.
The
student
is
prince.
Is something about old Heidelberg?
Yes, you've got another mark for your mate. The student prince in Heidelberg. Yes, that's good enough for a mark. And the connection with Al Jolson, the first performance 1924. Dennis?
I can give you a connection for about... I can give it for 75 marks, a connection between Al Jolson and Sigmund Romberg. I don't know whether it's the same one that you want. It doesn't have anything to do with the first performance, but the BBC have been doing a rather good life story of Jolson of late, and Sigmund Romberg wrote a show for Jolson, which was called... It was called Bombo. So Jolson appeared in a Romberg show. I take it that's only worth about 34 marks.
It's not worth that, because nobody mentioned Romberg until you did, actually. No, the connection is that the show, The Student Prince, opened at the Al Jolson Theatre on 59th Street in New York City.
Well, I mentioned Romberg because Romberg wrote The Student Prince.
I see your connection. Won't do, I'm afraid. One mark up to two is good enough. John, here's a different setting of the tune that I played to Ian. John, what academic occasion did that music mark, and when?
I think J. Brahms was getting frocked.
Yes, he was, really, yes. Yes, at, do you remember the university?
About 22. Mm-hmm.
Heidelberg?
No, Breslau, actually, but you got the idea. It was the presentation of a doctorate of...
Philosophy?
Yes, philosophy, to Brahms at the University of Breslau, and the year... Have a shot.
1873?
1880. Is that near enough?
Yes.
All right. We're all generous. All right. Two marks.
Incidentally, you know, that can be sung by the audience. Malcolm Sargent did an arrangement of it where it could be sung by the audience.
In the Academic Festival Overture?
Yes. Oh, and I've suggested to Robert Ponsonby, who does the Proms program, it'd be a marvellous thing for the last night to get the whole audience singing it. Yeah. I said, but you see, it has to be an English word. I said, well, Malcolm Sargent arranged. Yeah. So perhaps we may hear it one day, sung by the whole of the Albert Hall audience.
Perhaps we may. Meanwhile, Frank Muir, back to Mario Lanza and the student Pritz.
I fly, fly, hear your sign and take your feeling. I fly, fly, hear your sign and take your feeling.
Wink, wink, wink. Two eyes that are bright as stars when they're shining on me. Drink, drink, drink. Two lips that are red and sweet as the fruit on the tree.
Frank, half a mark each for naming four other drinking songs in the time it takes me to drain this glass of water. Go.
It's not a glass of water. It's had nothing in it. Beer, beer, glorious. Beer, old King Cole, Coke. Water boy, and to hell with burgundy.
I'm never going to do that again.
Neither am I.
I wasn't listening. How many did he get? Did he manage?
Five.
He got four, yes. I got Beer, Beer, Glorious Beer, the Stein song, Days of Wine and Roses, subtle one. And Drink to Me Only. Yes, you get your marks.
Sherry Ripe, Sherry Ripe.
Moving on, here are some alternative names, pen names, stage names, professional names. Ian, who was Francis Gum?
Francis Gum?
Dennis will write it down for you, I suspect.
Oh, she must have stuck at it, I suppose.
Judy Garland?
Judy Garland was Francis Gum, yes, originally. One mark to you.
Surprised she changed her name.
Dennis, who was Cliff Edwards?
Well, that wasn't his stage name, was it?
No, no, but the other one was. It's the other way around.
Cliff Edwards, yes. Really deserves a lot more acclaim than he got. He was the first person, actually, to sing Singing in the Rain. He was Ukulele Ike.
Ukulele Ike.
The voice of Jiminy Cricket. I also think the face of Jiminy Cricket in Pinocchio. Very much the same face.
Mm. John, Herr Jakob Beer. Who was he? Beer.
Meyer?
Meyer Beer, yes. 1791 to 1864, Meyer Beer was in fact Lagerbeer. Jakob Beer, mark to you. Frank, whom did Alfred Arnold Kokotza, Philadelphia truck driver, become? Alfred Arnold Kokotza.
Many singers have become truck drivers, but the only truck driver I know who's become a singer is back to Mario Lanza.
Yep, Mario Lanza is right. Mario Lanza it was, and mark to you. Leading at the moment in this game by 101 marks, John Amos and Frank Muir. It's time for the final round, where the listener gets a singing in the ears. Dennis, you first. I'm going to play you a tiny phrase of music, and I'll be very interested to hear how you continue it. Ready?
La-di-a, la-di-a.
I thought you would.
Oh,
yeah.
Marie, oh, Marie, you'll be late for your... Is another singer becoming a truck driver? The Tenement Symphony.
Yes, that's right. Tenement Symphony, but you're thinking of. But, of course, Ian would have made it... The Campbells Are Coming, but for you...
Was it with Alan Jones introduced that? Something we did somewhere with... There's somebody Jones. We worked out the song because Alan Jones is Jack's father, and the Alan Jones connected with the... Jack Jones and the Jack Jones connected with the Tom Jones.
Yes. Actually, that's such a good little addition, Dennis, that I think the audience will agree it deserves a bonus mark of 100 points. Hundred it is. Mm-hmm. John, most people think that Brahms composed the famous lullaby, but as you know, he didn't compose it, he arranged it. Can we have your arrangement? Brahms, lullaby. Can I give you a key?
Guten Abend, gute Nacht, mit Rosen bedacht, mit Näglein besteckt, schlopp unter die Deck, morgen früh, wenn Gott will, wirst du wieder geweckt, morgen früh.
Retake.
Morgen früh, wenn Gott will, wirst du wieder geweckt.
Now will you practice?
Frank, it's your turn. Can you manage a song about a lady from Idaho, a Miss D. Daydream from Idaho?
I always thought it was the name of a potato. Because potatoes come from Idaho. Like sort of King Edwards.
Have a go.
Have we got a key?
Well, try one. I'd rather it wasn't the key John sang it, but the old...
Little Dolly Daydream.
Just start and I'll join.
Little Dolly Daydream, pride of Idaho, and there you go. And when you go, if you should see a little lady on home, no one's gonna kiss the gal but me.
Well...
Yeah.
I think the words got a bit lost in the middle of Idaho, but never mind. Little Donnie.
And where were you?
trying to fill in the cracks, actually, between the notes. Ian, who was born at Maxwellton House, Dumfriesshire, and what would you be prepared to do for her? Can you answer in song, please?
Oh, that's lovely.
I'll try to do that again.
I hate to spoil that.
Maxwellton blazed on a bonny where early falls the dew, and it's there that Annie Laurie gave me her promise to, which never God shall be. And for a bonny Annie Laurie I would lay me down.
Thank you, Ian. Next week is the last in the present series of my music programmes. Meanwhile, this has been a victory by one mark for John Amis and Frank Muir. Goodbye.
Taking part in my music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis North. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race, and the program was produced by Tony Schreier.